Dr. Jeffrey Halstead has been Canandaigua's hometown dentist for more than 35 years, offering routine dental care as well as cosmetic dentistry, implants, and dentures by their highly trained and experienced staff. Visit them online at canandaiguadentistry.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram. The holiday weekend is here, and for many across upstate New York, that means travel. For FingerLakes1.com, this is Inside the FLX. I'm Josh Durso, and today we are taking a closer look at EVs, specifically how folks go about preparing for holiday travel or travel any time of year. One of the biggest criticisms of EVs is the lack of charging infrastructure in between population centers in upstate New York. To discuss that, as well as the direction of EV charging technology, my guest is Michael Triman, VP of Sales for Charge Smart EV, which is headquartered in Rochester. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time today. Let's start with this. Give us a lay of the land, if you could. What does the current charging infrastructure landscape look like across upstate New York?
Across upstate New York specifically, as you can imagine, our higher population centers have far more charging infrastructure than our rural areas. Yeah. I live in the Binghamton region, the southern tier. And so our more rural communities, our less metropolitan regions, obviously are starving for electric vehicle infrastructure, both on the level three and level two side. Buffalo, Rochester, Albany, those kinds of areas, especially downstate, you'll be much more confident driving an EV than in my neck of the woods. So in terms of what's available in the upstate region or across New York, as a whole, it's kind of far too variable is, I think, the best answer.
When you think about where it was, though, just a couple years ago, I would assume you feel like it's improved quite a bit. And I think objectively speaking, it seems like there are a lot more charging stations going up at businesses, at population centers, and also a lot of other places that are in more rural parts of the region. We're out here in the Finger Lakes, and I can think of, you know, a handful of spots just off the top of my head around our office in a town of 5,000 people that charging stations now, weren't a few years ago. So when you think mm-hmm. about how far we've come in the last 3, 4, 5 years, what stands out to you about that?
It's been a significant increase. I think we've tripled our infrastructure just in the last 5 years. Yeah. It's still a far cry for what's needed. But absolutely. There's been a significant saturation of EV infrastructure where there just simply wasn't any, even 5 years ago.
So tell us a little bit about what Charge Smart EV does and where you guys stand in this whole mix.
Sure. So we're aggressively competing for the number one spot in, you know, certain utility territories, NYSEG RG&E being one of them. Our job is to put this infrastructure in the ground for many reasons, the environmental aspect of it, the GHG reduction aspect of it. But of course, as a business too, the 10 years from now, half the companies doing this kind of work will no longer exist. The networks will consolidate and it'll be mergers and acquisitions and so on and so forth. And eventually we will have this evolution of what it means to have EV infrastructure. So we're doing our part both as a business and, you know, for the greater good also.
When you're giving someone some advice, I would assume there's kind of like two different ways to approach this, planning for a day trip versus planning for a longer trip, more than a day trip. What do those conversations look like in terms of what you advise people to be thinking about or how to kind of strategize, given that in different places, the infrastructure is in different places? So talk to us a little bit about how you approach that conversation.
So, that's a loaded question because obviously it's largely dependent on what vehicle the person is driving. Right. So there's a huge difference in conversation between someone who drives a plug-in hybrid vehicle versus someone who drives a full battery EV vehicle. I think the question obviously is more geared towards those who are in the market or currently in possession of a full battery EV. So I'll frame the answer around that. If someone were to ask me, realistically, I've thought about a lot of this, or I've thought about this a lot since I was approached about the interview. And realistically, a lot of the driving habits and behaviors are things that we've already been pushing for years, and regardless of what kind of vehicle you have, because auto insurance carriers, for instance, have been incentivizing safe driving habits through the OBD ports that you install, like the safe driver discounts and stuff. It monitors how quickly you accelerate, how much braking you're doing. These kinds of things all have an impact on a combustion engine. They all have the same similar impact, I should say, on a battery vehicle, right? So how quickly I accelerate and the speed at which I travel on the highway, right? It's a 65 mile per hour zone. My battery is going to do better at 65 than it will at 85, for instance. So a lot of these driving behaviors are going to be similarly carried over. The real major difference between an EV or an ICE or internal combustion engine vehicle is going to be where those charging ports are along your journey. And that is really the only major consideration that EV drivers and the industry as a whole really need to consider is planning your route. And unfortunately, that means you may have to go out of your way in order to get a charge, in order to complete your travel, your intended destination. Getting there might actually take you longer, not just for the time it takes to charge, but the routes you may have to take to be able to get the sufficient charge to complete your journey.
When you're thinking about that, and in terms of like, I want to say like the next 3 to 5 to maybe 7 years, are we within that range of being to a point, not just in upstate New York, but almost everywhere where that isn't as much of a consideration, where you don't have to kind of like try to look at a map and figure out where the spots are and maybe drive out of your way? Are we inching closer here to that point where it is kind of a really complete mesh network of charging infrastructure everywhere?
I think so. Absolutely. I think we're making significant strides. I would even go so far as to say inching is a miscategorization, because we're actually moving very quickly towards it. And 2024 is going to be a huge year for the infrastructure as a whole nationwide as the federal NEVI program installations actually start happening. They were all applied for and awarded in 2023. 2024 is when we start seeing things actually get constructed and put into the ground. In fact, New York has actually successfully constructed a few of those projects this year. And as that DC or direct current fast charging, DCFC, happens nationwide, the range anxiety conversation actually has an answer for once. And I think we'll continue making significant strides into that because there are still a number of years of NEVI funding to come. And then, of course, companies like ours are complementing that fast charging infrastructure with a broad network of level two charging at a lot of places that we frequent, like hotels, restaurants, bars, retail shopping centers, and so on and so forth.
It seems like the more conversations I have with folks, there is always, I guess, a desire to see the fastest and quickest charging available out there. But it seems like level two is the most important in terms of getting it everywhere. Is that the more feasible of options currently for most communities across upstate?
From an infrastructure standpoint, it is the most feasible because it requires the least amount of construction, excavation, and power. The level two chargers obviously use a significantly less amount of power, but they also put out a significantly less amount of power. But it is actually the most broad sense of charging because, as I kind of briefly mentioned before, my hybrid, if I can charge it at every place that I stop, if I get lunch for an hour, it's charging for an hour. If I stay at a hotel, it's charging overnight. If I go to a retail shopping center, it's charging for an hour or two. And if I continuously recharge my hybrid battery, I'm not using gasoline to make my journey. So the level two charging is actually far more attractive to folks like myself and all of those folks who are going to be adopting that plug-in hybrid model. But for the full battery drivers, again, it's just a matter of replacing behaviors. We're accustomed to pulling up to a gas pump and being in and out of there in 2, 3, 5 minutes, depending on the size of your tank. And people want that same experience in the electric vehicle world, which we will get there, but there's going to be a significant number of changes that need to happen from a technology standpoint, the actual batteries themselves and what they're capable of and how quickly they can charge.
Want to get your thoughts on this because it's something that's kind of puzzled me over the last 5 years or so. Why have we not seen gas stations adopt EV chargers or create space for EV chargers within their existing footprints? Because it does, you pointed to something right there that I think is really important. A lot of people want that quote unquote gas station experience where they can just drive up in a convenient location, drive away. But it seems like we aren't seeing as much development on that front as I personally would have expected even a few years ago, given the rates of EV adoption that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think, ultimately the real answer to that question, I think, comes down to the executive level decision making, right? At the very, very, very top. And it really comes down to obviously two things, finances and ideology. For some folks, I suspect EV is a threat to that business model of selling gasoline, and just general petroleum product. So I think that's a part of it, but I also think I've known for years, and they you talk to someone who owns a gas station or has been involved in that industry, we know that realistically they're only earning a few cents a gallon, right? And so when it comes down to finances, I don't know why it hasn't happened yet. Because personally, based on all the financial models I've seen, there's actually more revenues for a gas station owner to do EV charging. There's actually more revenues in it than there is in standard gasoline. So I don't know the exact answer to your question, but it has to be top-down decision making, ideology, and finance. And then the third, and this is more tertiary, of course, is I think some folks. Even at those executive levels, excuse me, are probably waiting to see what happens. But there's a huge risk in that because waiting to see is not necessarily the smartest business strategy in a lot of cases. There's definitely risk involved, and some folks are taking that risk, like Circle K, for instance. They are a gas station, but they are also installing their own level three charging at their gas stations. They've taken that leap. So yes, the batteries might change, the technology might change. As we know, the NACS plug versus CCS plug is a huge debate, and it's evolving. So you could wait to see what happens when the dust settles, or you get in on the ground floor. And realistically, I think that comes down to individual, very subjective decision making.
Can you explain the difference in that plug difference that you just mentioned? Because I've seen that, and I think some people have heard about it, but they definitely don't understand it. Explain what's going on there.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks just think it's a matter of the plug. I think a lot of folks think it's just a matter of changing the adapter or the plug, but there's actually quite a bit of technological infrastructure that goes into the difference between CCS and NACS. And it's about its ability to convert, voltage and transmit power through the appropriate voltage and what's available in a commercial space between 480 volt and 240 or 208 volt. The technical details I won't bore you with, but there is a significant decision-making process that has to go into adopting that plug head. And I do believe NACS is actually the better way to go as a result of, all those technological considerations. But realistically, what the average consumer needs to know is that it's in and of itself is not a factor to consider having the infrastructure on your property. Right. Because that's something we hear a lot is, well, I just heard that Ford and GM and Honda have all adopted the NACS plug. So I don't want to install these stations now because it might change again. And it's going to change in 2 years and 3 years. And then you're going to come back to me and ask for more money to do this, that, or the other thing. That's not a realistic assessment of how this plays out. Realistically, it's about transmitting electricity from the power source to the vehicle. And everything in between can be adjusted and modified and changed without a significant investment from any one person. And it certainly will not disqualify any one vehicle or another from charging, because we know Teslas can charge at any level two station. And it really just comes down again to what you mentioned earlier about the speed at which my vehicle charges being the primary factor from a consumer standpoint.
If you're giving a grade to the average consumer at this point, with EVs kind of being, I'd say, like 5 years in the mainstream-ish so far, what would you grade the average person's knowledge or just awareness of all of the things that are involved with EVs, given how much the state is actually investing into it, and where we're going over the next 5 years? All the manufacturers are going that direction as well. So it seems like full steam ahead. Where do you think the average person is, though, given some of the realities of how complex it is?
If I were to give it a letter grade, the average consumer is somewhere between a C plus and a B minus. And it's realistically, it has to do a lot with our media, the way the media works in the 21st century. There for every one story that speaks truth about the future of EV and its capabilities and what it can do for the world as a whole, as well as our transportation infrastructure and our day-to-day light duty, heavy duty, and all these factors involved. For every one article that speaks the truth about it and its potential, there's another article that talks about the materials and the waste and the recycling aspect and really sheds a negative light on these things, the same way it did for solar for years and years and years before people really came to realize that there's really no downside to going solar. I think we're at a place like that with solar now, but it's taken us 30 years to get to that place. And now that EV is really mainstream, which is to say it's on every football game, there's a commercial for an EV, right? And I think that's how we gauge what's popular now, is what we see in our commercials. But I think now that it is mainstream, like you said, about 5 years or so, I think people are going to find themselves more educated. Companies like mine, we try to help. We try to help with that. We do plenty of, completely free public presentation style things where we talk about the trends and the industry and what we are seeing and what's working and what's not working and so on and so forth. So, there's definitely going to be a lag time in that. And again, just like we talked about with the gas stations adoption of EV charging, it comes down to ideology, right? I've run into plenty of folks who, just because EVs don't rip and roar when you slam on the gas pedal, that in and of itself is a reason enough not to engage in the industry as a whole. And it makes it a lot easier for those folks to harp on the negative aspects of it, whatever they might be.
Is it feels like, from my perspective, though, that we're coming to the end of the road with that, because as the manufacturers fall into a place over the next 3 to 4 years where they are basically exclusively producing EVs, it almost seems like we're going to come to the end of that. Do you feel that way in the industry, or do you?
Absolutely. I think for those folks I just mentioned, they're feeling very forced, and nobody likes to feel forced, right? Especially when it comes from a politician, realistically, right? That's what we're talking about here. It's legislation forcing a mandate, which no one, at least not in recent history, has been particularly keen on. But there are some unique technologies out there, like the Fratsonic Resonant Chamber system that Stellantis is launching on their 2025 Daytona SRT, that are trying to bridge the gap between the motor sports enthusiasts and the conscientious EV driver, right? And the one linking factor there, of course, is that EVs, by far and large, if you're a motor sports enthusiast, are fast, right? And that is the linking bridge there. It really comes down to the fact that, like I said, a lot of folks really want to hear the vehicle when it goes. And I will admit, watching a NASCAR race in complete silence just doesn't taste the same, as what we have right now. So there's a lot of different aspects of this, a lot of different variables that just need to be looked at and addressed, and then weighed in importance. And how important the sound of the vehicle is, I don't know that that weighs heavily on the future of the industry, but I do know for a fact that it is a holdup for some folks.
Yeah. What's one thing that makes you excited about where EVs are going in 2024 and 2025?
I am really excited to see the evolution of the battery technology. Right. You know, companies like Toyota have announced that they've come up with a solid state battery that can deliver 725 miles of driving range. We've got the solid state batteries. We've got, you know, there's technologies out there right now, like the sodium ion or lithium sulfur or lithium iron. There's even carbon nanotube electrodes. There's a ton of different technologies all addressing the one concern, which is the focus of this interview, which is range anxiety, right? You know, and second to that, of course, is how does weather interact with our batteries, right? It's one thing I'm fully honest with folks about when they're talking about this exact thing. Do I get a full battery EV? Yeah, you can. And just like combustion engine vehicles, you know, idle time to heat up and all these things, we're burning gas in a lot of ways beyond transportation. The same thing is true for EVs. It just might be a little bit more accentuated because you will lose battery by just having it sit in the driveway in negative 2 degree temperature while 3 feet of snow drop on us. There is that factor, which is why the hybrid world is going to see a huge surge in popularity for the colder climates, especially in 2024, 25. But a lot of that will be alleviated by the evolution of the battery technology itself. That's what I'm most excited about.
And then last thing here, can you just give us an your version of the elevator pitch on why EVs make sense and why they are the future, even up here in upstate New York, where some folks are going to say, well, geez, it's so cold. And like you said, you know, the batteries just aren't as good. They're still a few years away. Give us the elevator pitch for right now, though. The technology is still really good.
Yeah, whether it's hybrid or full battery, the elevator pitch is the same. It increases fuel efficiency. It is socially responsible, and it's more economical. Just straight up more economical, right? I can put 1,500 miles on my van between fill-ups at the tank. 1,500 miles, and we have all of us Americans have seen $5, $6, $7 a gallon price on gasoline. That is not an outlier. It will continue to happen, and eventually it will become the norm that we are paying $5, $6, $7 a gallon at the gas pump. We need an alternative. And this, unlike gasoline, doesn't just evaporate into the atmosphere. It is rechargeable. No one gave anyone a hard time back in the 80s and 90s when rechargeable Duracells came out. So I don't know why there's such a huge contention around this. If I can recharge my mode of transportation rather than completely exhaust the fuel source and to never use it again, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, appreciate the time today. Thanks so much for taking it.